Myers, a 22-year-old grown unschooler who lives in Austin, Texas. Welcome, Maya.
Hey, Blake. Thanks for having me.
You and I know each other through the online world. What was our first connection?
I think that you put out a call for people to help with your way of learning. Is that what it was called?
The way of online adventure.
Yeah, way of adventure. Yeah. So I like kind of interned and helped out, kind of tested that course with you. And that was like 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, that was a while ago now. And you are a grown unschooler. Were you unschooled your entire life?
I was. We started out with kind of like some like homeschool curricula that my mom worked through, but my parents were always like super, super supportive, and my brother and I had like tons of freedom. So we didn't like discover the label unschooler until we were teenagers, but I think we always were doing it for my whole life.
Okay, de facto unschoolers.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever been to school?
Mm-mm. No, I remember being little, my brother and I like really wanted to go to school because we wanted to ride the school bus. But then my mom like got us to go on some kind of field trip, and then we were perfectly satisfied. We never wanted to go to school again.
Nice redirection, mom. Well played.
Exactly.
Yeah, instead of a bus, how about a train?
Right.
And I think we have to mention also that you are the editor-in-chief of the website grownunschoolers.com. You and I collaborate on this website.
Yes. Yeah. So that's been really cool because I've gotten to read and see a lot of different people who had like, you know, some people had really similar backgrounds to mine. Some people had really different. So it's really cool to see all the different ways that unschooling can kind of turn out.
And for those of you who don't know about this, it's just a website where we collect long form interviews with grown unschoolers. And unschooler doesn't have to mean like narrowly someone who's homeschooled but is highly self-directed. You could have gone to a democratic free school. You could have gone to school for a lot of your life and then left school. And, you know, it's pretty open. And Maya and I want your profiles. So please go to grownunschoolers.com, submit it, and Maya will personally write you back and handle your interview process.
Yes.
It's a promise. Okay. We are talking about college and gap years on this episode. And I think your story is very interesting because a lot of people take one gap year. Some people will then take two gap years. You are working on gap year number 4 right now.
Yes. Yes, I am. And they've kind of been, each one has been kind of different, but they like lead kind of organically into each other. And I've just had a really good time.
So you did not go into this at age 17 or 18 thinking, I'm going to take 4 gap years.
Mm-mm, no, I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to go to college, but I was pretty sure that, you know, I would take a year. And then after that year, I'd have everything figured out and then, you know, probably go to college. But it kind of, you know, one thing kind of led to another, and I've been doing different things each year.
We're going to talk about those different things in each year, but let's go back to your time growing up and tell me a bit more about what your version of unschooling looked like, how much academic content there was, how interested you were in going to college, like what your early thoughts and beliefs were around higher education.
Yeah, so I always kind of, when I was younger, assumed that I'd go to college. Both of my parents went to college, and like I really liked classroom learning, and like I took an online Latin class, I did a couple co-ops, and then like early high school I started taking community college classes, and I really enjoyed that kind of learning environment, and so it just kind of seemed like, you know, college would be the next natural step, and I took a couple like AP classes and took some AP tests, and you know, it was all pretty fun, honestly. Like I enjoyed studying and I enjoyed like working hard for grades. But then by the time I was a senior in high school, I was just feeling really burnt out. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. Plus I knew that if I went to college, I would study English, and that just didn't seem like a great guarantee of like a job or a way to like pay off student debt. So I decided to take some time off to figure out like if that was what I wanted to go into. Mm.
Let me ask a few clarifying questions here. So first of all, you said when you were a senior in high school, you just mean like the equivalent year?
Yeah, like when I was 17, but okay. I was still By that point, I definitely considered myself unschooled.
Were you following any sort of formal curriculum or trajectory?
No, I think basically like when I was 15, I started really like taking charge of my own education. So by that point, my parents kind of like took a back seat and they like just supported what I wanted to do, but they never really told me what I needed to do. So I like, you know, I picked classes that I wanted to sign up for. And then I kind of like, I was taking a couple math classes at a co-op just because I felt like I should, even though I didn't particularly love math. But I wasn't following any kind of like guideline other than what I made up for myself.
Okay. So the AP classes, the community college classes, those were all you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there were a couple times, like, my mom especially noticed that I was like getting really stressed out about it and like putting a lot of importance on grades. And she, you know, suggested that I like chill out about it a little bit more. She was saying that it wasn't as important as I was making it out to be. But for a while, I was like very convinced that I needed to, you know, like get really excellent grades and try and go to college right away. So it was a lot of self-imposed pressure.
Interesting. And you were thinking about the finances of your college decision, and you were assuming that were you assuming you were going to go to a public university or a private institution? Did you assume you were going to be taken on debt?
My dream situation growing up, I was like, oh, I want to go to like a private liberal arts school and study English, but that was just like not really like financially an option. So I was just kind of thinking that I'd go to like a public university, but even then, like, I would definitely, like, I'd look for scholarships, but I'd probably have to take out loans as well. And both of my parents were English majors, and they were able to go to school without debt. And they were like, you know, it was a good experience, but they both said that they didn't think that it was something they would, you know, they would have gone into debt for. It's, like, not the most lucrative career field.
Did you feel a bit burned by that? Like, this is nothing against your parents. It's just against, like, our economic realities today that your parents were able to go, I assume, to public universities and study English, or, you know, this could be any other, you know, seemingly worthless, I put that word in scare quotes, liberal arts degree. And they didn't, I'm just assuming they had to pay very little, or it was completely compensated by the state. And now you don't have that same option.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have very strong feelings about that. I don't feel that bad about it.
Okay. So you were considering English. And, you know, English strikes me as something that is, it's actually a pretty good idea if you want to get serious about writing and about discussing literature. It's a pretty good idea to have a real-life college classroom. When people talk about disrupting higher education and taking online courses, and I think, yeah, that's wonderful for coding, but for something like workshopping an essay, it's much more difficult to do online. So did you feel like you were potentially missing out on your desire to study English by not going to college?
Yeah, I have thought about that and worried about that some. I think I have a really great community college nearby, so I've been taking classes there. I took a really wonderful memoir and essay writing class last semester, and that was really great because, you know, it's like super affordable and nearby, and the teacher that I had was really, really excellent. And I'm taking another class there in the spring. So I feel really lucky that there are other options outside of traditional four-year university. And then there's also, you know, like different writing groups and different, like, you know, like I could set up things with friends. So I don't feel like the only way to get that kind of workshop experience is through a four-year university.
All right. So take me to the moment where you were thinking about applying to college and then you decided not to. What happened then?
So this was when I was 17 or 18. And like I said, I was like very stressed. I had been like assuming that I'd go to college for a long time, but I was just really dragging my feet. Like I wasn't writing the essay, and like I love writing essays. So it was really weird that I didn't want to write this essay. And then I was just talking to my mom one night, and she was like, you know, like, you don't need to do this right now. You can just like take a year and do other things, work on, you know, like personal writing projects and then figure out where you are at the end of that. And it like blew my mind, like that I didn't have to go to college right away. It just felt like this huge, like opening up of possibilities. And so like, right when she said that, I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So then, for the next year after that, I basically like worked on personal projects and honestly didn't really think about college a lot, other than like sometimes questioning my own decision. But for the most part, I felt pretty good about what I was doing.
Okay, so you're living at home. Were you continuing to meet up with friends from your homeschooling unschooling world in Austin?
Yeah. So a couple, actually, most of my friends were like around my age or a year younger. So they were still, most of them were still living at home too. So it was really like, I mean, not much changed from my like last year of like quote unquote high school into my gap year, because I was, you know, still living at home, still working part time, still doing, you know, learning in the way that I wanted to learn and doing the things I wanted to do.
Okay. Because I've heard a number of stories from people who all of their friends are leaving to go away to college, and it becomes a very isolating experience to become the person. And this could happen to someone who goes to regular high school or someone who's unschooled. But it becomes very isolating to be the one who's not going away to college. So you were lucky in that your friend group was a bit more age diverse. And so you could just continue enjoying your life at home.
Yeah, that would be really hard, I think, if everyone else had left and I was stuck. I think that would, I would have not had as good of an experience as I did if that was the case.
You said you were working on projects. Like, tell me more.
Yeah, so one thing that I really wanted to do was have a very, like, volunteer-centric year. I think that part of that was just to feel that, you know, even if I didn't finish any writing that I was proud of, just to feel that I had done something to like contribute, something that felt good. So I like volunteered as a literacy tutor at an elementary school near my house. So I would like go and read with kids there. And then I also volunteered at a program that sends books to inmates in Texas prisons. So you like get a letter and then respond to them and find books that will match their interests. And so doing those things, I did both of those about once a week for a while, which felt like really like meaningful and fun. And then I also started a blog and wrote on my blog. And then I tried to write a lot of different things, but it was kind of difficult without the structure and accountability of classes, because I wasn't taking any writing classes at that time. So there was a lot of like kind of stopping and starting, not knowing where to go next in my own writing. But I did keep, you know, like journaling and personal writing throughout that whole time.
And you said you didn't think about college that much. Did you have any anxiety or second thoughts about your decision during this first gap year?
I don't remember. I remember feeling anxiety just about like what I was going to do with my whole life. But luckily, the people in my life at that time were really supportive of my decision not to go right away. And so I felt really like, you know, I don't think that I would have felt less anxious if I had been in college at the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good way to compare it. Not like, did you have any anxiety or zero anxiety, but do you think it was comparable to how you would have felt if you were in a normal four-year college?
Yeah, and I think that if I had been in college, I might have even felt more anxious, because I would have been like following someone else's, you know, guidelines. I would have been taking the classes someone else thought I should take. Whereas like being able to choose what I did with my time, I at least knew that like no matter what happened, I was doing what felt right for me at the time, which did give me a little bit of like comfort, I think.
Okay. Take me to the moment where you decided to do a second gap year. What led up to that, and what contributed to your decision?
So that I can like pinpoint to the second. I remember at the end of like my first gap year, I went to, this was like around the time of Hurricane Harvey in Houston. And so I went with like my family and like some people that my mom knew to go help like muck out houses there. And as we were driving back, I just felt really strongly that I wanted to like go somewhere far from home, because I was still living at home at the time. And I wanted to like go somewhere else and do some kind of like meaningful service work and just get out of my own like bubble that I'd been living in. So within the next few weeks, I found this program that had like exchange programs where you could go teach English in schools in other parts of the world. And so I applied and I got in, and then I got to go teach English in Nanjing, China for 4 months the next spring.
Okay, I need to hear more about this, because you just said that in like two sentences. But I mean, tell me about your desire to teach English abroad. And a lot of people, I think, have this kind of romantic vision of what that's like. That doesn't always match up with reality. So what was your life like on the ground there?
So it was, there was, you know, of course, a lot of good and bad. So the good, I got to teach in a kindergarten, which was super fun. It was really great because I think it was a lot less like anxiety provoking than if I was teaching older kids, I think, because it was very much like I just got to play with them. And then it was also really rewarding because, you know, the kids were at this time, you know, in their development where they can like absorb new languages so quickly. So by the end of 4 months, like we were having conversations and it was like super cool to see their progression. The hardest part, I think I just got sick a lot. There was like a lot of pollution. I had like a really bad head cold for pretty much the entire 4 months, but it was, I don't know. It was just a really rewarding, really great experience overall.
You were 19 at this time?
Yes, I think so. Yeah,
okay. That sounds right. And I mean, living in a totally different part of the world for 4 months at that age is really intimidating for a lot of people. And tell us a bit more just about like where you lived, how you fed yourself, you know, what your social life was like, how you stayed sane.
Yeah, so the program that I went with, there were a bunch of other teachers also from America who were going there too. So I lived, it was like the top floor of the, it was like a boarding school type thing. So all of the Chinese teachers lived in one apartment building because they also lived like on campus. And then me and like 25 other American teachers lived on the top floor. And so like I shared like basically a dorm room with one other teacher. And then there was like a little mini kitchen at the end of the hall that all of us shared. So that was nice because it was kind of like a built-in social network because there weren't many other, because I only speak English. So there weren't many other English speaking people around. So I felt very lucky that there were these people. I don't know what I would have done otherwise. I probably would have learned more Chinese, which would have been nice.
But easy, no problem.
Yeah, right. Get some like Duolingo and I'm good. So then in terms of feeding myself, that we could just eat at the cafeteria on campus, and then there was like a grocery store nearby. And the way that this program worked, like we got like a little bit of a stipend to like get food and classroom supplies and stuff. So it was really like the whole thing was like super affordable, super like it felt pretty safe, like having this whole group of people also there with me in the same boat. Mm-hmm. So I never felt like I was really truly on my own, which was nice because I mean, like this was the first time that I hadn't like been living with my parents and my brother, and I just moved like 7,000 miles away from them. So it was like, you know, a bit of a shock, but overall it felt easier than I thought that it might.
It almost sounds like you were in college in a certain way.
Yeah.
Kind of in a dorm, you know, even the physical environment you described with a little mini kitchen at the end of the hallway and everything set up for you. Did you have to pay to participate in this program?
Mm-hmm. The program fee covered, it was basically like the cost of my air travel there. And then they paid for me to like stay in the house and give me food and stuff. It was like, yeah, not very expensive, but okay. I wasn't being paid to be there.
Okay, but almost break even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's incredible. So you did this for 4 months. You spent maybe the cost of the plane ticket and your housing and food was covered. Did you have to work 18 hours a day?
It was nothing. I literally worked 8 to 12 every morning. And then the rest of the day I could like explore. I got 2 weeks off. So we got to travel. I got to camp on the Great Wall, which was like the coolest thing. I never thought I'd be able to do that.
I'm sure I will have people emailing me asking for the specific name of this program. So would you mind sharing it?
Yeah, for sure. It's called International Language Programs. And it is super cool. They have a bunch of programs going different places. And yeah, I'd totally recommend it.
There you go. International language programs, free marketing. You're welcome.
Awesome.
But it sounds like they deserve it. So good for them.
Yeah.
Okay. So this was your second year. You were inspired by doing hurricane relief work. You said, I'm going to go do more service work. I'll teach English in China. You did that for about half of your gap year. What did you do for the second half?
The second half was, at least the summer, was a little bit of a letdown. I came home and I was really, really sick. So I ended up just being sick for like 2 or 3 months, just kind of recovered. And then I just basically the rest of that year, I kind of worked part time because, you know, like expenses weren't high, but I also went on a lot of trips. So I came back with like no money. So I kind of just recovered and built up my savings a little bit more.
Okay. Were you doing part time jobs? How did you build up those savings?
Yeah, I was just working at Starbucks part time. And yeah, that was about it. I don't remember a whole lot more. I think the rest of that year was pretty much just like a recovery haze.
All right. So the real price you paid for that volunteering was in your
lungs. Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Caveat emptor. Let's see. At the end of your second gap year, were you feeling stress or anxiety or externalized pressure to go to college?
I don't think that I was at all, actually. I felt really glad that I was able to get out of my own little bubble. I think that the first part of my gap year where I was just living at home, I was having a really good time. I like enjoyed pretty much every day, but I felt like I think that I was just afraid that I wasn't experiencing new things and I wasn't like really challenging myself. And like, that's not to say that that year wasn't hard, because it was hard in a lot of ways to like find things that I wanted to do and motivate myself to do them. But just like living at home, being in the same place that I'd always been, I think that that caused me some anxiety. So then my second year, like knowing that I could go somewhere really far away from home and make it work, I felt like pretty good about that. So I didn't really feel anxious that year.
All right, let's transition into gap year number 3. We're getting close to recent history here. So were you thinking about applying to college after gap year number 2, or were you just rolling straight into your next adventure?
I was kind of thinking about applying to college for the same thing. Like, you know, I wanted like a writing group. I wanted accountability. But then, I don't know, I started looking into it more seriously and I just kind of didn't want to be told what to do. I didn't want to like have to take required classes. And I also kind of wanted to like, I felt like I'd already had a taste of like, you know, working and getting out into real life. And I didn't want to have to wait 4 more years to do that again. So last spring I started looking for like jobs and internships and things that I felt like that I could do now without a college degree, but that would also make me feel like I was like contributing to the world in a way that felt good to me.
And what did you find?
In the spring, I got this really, really great internship at the Colorado River Alliance, which is a nonprofit that teaches like water information, like water education and environmental education to kids. So I led field trips to 3rd through 5th graders about like pollution in watersheds. And that was super, super fun. I got to be outside all the time and like squirt chocolate syrup on models of the river, which was super exciting. And it was just a really good time.
Yeah, that sounds like some of the outdoor education jobs I had right after college. Did you struggle to find this position or other positions that would accept you, would even look at your application without a 4-year degree? Because I think a lot of people are concerned that even finding a quality internship is challenging if you don't have a degree, because everyone has degrees and there's degree inflation, credential inflation. Therefore, it's kind of irresponsible to do what you're doing, because maybe you'll get lucky and find a position, but more likely you're going to get shut out of the job market, maybe even the internship market.
I was definitely concerned about that. I did look at a bunch of internships, and some of them, especially nonprofit internships, they like can't pay interns, so they need interns who can accept course credit, like just the way that it works like through their organization. So there were some positions that I don't think I could have gotten because I couldn't get class credit for them. But I found this internship and another one. A lot of it, I think, was just kind of, I reached out to the people and I said, like, you know, I'm not a student, but I really want to work with your organization and I think you're doing really great work. And they were super welcoming. I think that it's easier if you start at a smaller company where you can have that kind of like personal connection. Like I just like, you know, emailed them and heard right back from them and they were interested in my story and they were willing to work with me. So I feel like, yeah, I don't think that not going to school really prevented me from doing anything there.
Okay. And so you were not just submitting formal applications or responding to formal job or internship postings. You were finding these, in this case, these nonprofits that interested you, and you would just find their contact information online and send them an email and introduce yourself?
So the Colorado River Alliance one, I think that one I found the information, and then I just applied. I went through their website. So that was pretty much like just like a standard application. But then another internship that I had that same spring was with the Writers League of Texas, and with them I happened to like know someone who used to be on the board, and so I like asked her if she could write me a letter of recommendation. So it was just kind of like working through the networks that I already had. And that also, like, it felt like, yeah, that was, I think, the personal connection that I was talking about more.
Got it. Okay. And what else were you doing at the same time? I assume this was a part-time thing with the Colorado River Alliance.
Yeah, so both of those internships were unpaid, so I was also working at Starbucks to make money.
Got it. Good old Starbucks.
Good old Starbucks, what a time.
And you're living at home, and so I assume you're able to save this money that you're earning. Are you feeling any hesitancy at this point, age 20, about still living at home? Like, it sounds like you and your parents have a really great relationship. That's great. But, even with a great parent-child relationship, you can get tired of not having your own place.
Yeah, I definitely. I've always had, I feel like, a really great relationship with my family, but I was feeling at that time like, yeah, I wanted to get out. I also, like we were living in the suburbs, and I wanted to like live a little closer to downtown. So I started looking into co-ops because I wanted to move out, but I didn't really want an apartment and I didn't want to live by myself. So I found a couple co-ops that I was interested in. And then that spring, I ended up moving into this co-op where I live now that I super, super love. It's like very like hippy dippy, like vegetarian, consensus based, intergenerational. Like we have like compost. I
I'm
really
sure
like
you
it.
have endless compost piles.
Yep.
I know what a hippie co-op is, Maya, but I think a lot of our listeners might not. So could you explain it to us from the basics?
Yeah, sure. So it's a big house. 14 people live here, and we share, like, we're all kind of co-owners of the house, and then we share responsibility for it. So we all pitch in with labor. We have like different labor that we do each week. We share meals, and then we vote on the way that the house runs. Yeah, I think that that's pretty much it. Is there anything else to
Yeah.
explain?
So cooperative means, well, co-op means cooperative in general. And the idea is
Oh,
you're
yeah.
not just exchanging money for a place to live, but instead everyone actively participates in this place. And yeah, you can't just like be a complete hermit who doesn't talk to anyone else. It's for community-minded people. Yeah, and
Exactly.
you say intergenerational. I've never lived in an intergenerational housing co-op. Like, what's the age range?
It's huge. So I'm the youngest person. I'm 22 now, and then the oldest person is I think 75, and he's been living here for like 25 years.
Wow, cool. And yeah, I loved my experience living in the student co-ops at UC Berkeley. And I know that there are similar cooperative systems in other college towns, Austin being a great example, of course. And I know it's very hard to find these kinds of places outside of college towns. That just seems to be where they pop up. And so, do you have any advice for people listening who are interested in finding housing co-ops? Like, how would someone in your situation who doesn't live in Austin, Texas, maybe look for a co-op?
I know that I recently went to a NASCO conference. I forget what it stands for. I
National
think
Student of Student National Association of Student. I went to one of their conferences too when I was like 20, but continue.
Yeah, it stands for something. Anyway, I think that they'd probably be a good resource because I know that they have like they kind of connect a lot of co-ops in different places. I do think though, like you said, it is a very like college town thing. So I don't know the best way to find a co-op in a place that is a little smaller or a little less college-y.
Yeah, I guess you just Google it.
Yeah, I guess that would work.
So the co-ops where I live, it's now called the Berkeley Student Cooperatives. They required that you were a full-time student, and you could be a community college student, you could be a UC Berkeley student. Most people were Berkeley students, but you couldn't just be a community member. And so it sounds like your co-op doesn't have that restriction.
Yeah. So there are definitely a lot of student-only co-ops in Austin, but there's also a surprising number of independent ones. I think that there are four or five, maybe. And like this co-op specifically started out as a student co-op in like the 1940s, and then ever since then it's kind of evolved. So now I think there's like two or three grad students, but most people here are like, grown-up people who aren't in school.
Yeah, and even at the student co-ops that I knew, there was always some people there who found a way to get themselves in without being a formal student. Like they were just a long-term guest of the house. They didn't sleep in an official room, and so yeah, I love co-ops, and I'm so glad that you found one you really love there because they provided such an important part of my college experience, and it's almost cheating to say that it was part of college experience because the co-op was not owned by the college. And I could have been going to community college. I could have been, one of those people who didn't actually do full-time school. And that social life and getting introduced to this diverse group of people who were very interesting, thought-provoking. Some of my still, longest time friends came from the Berkeley student co-ops. And that was all quite separate from the experience of being a college student. So yeah, I'm with you. We're both out there pushing co-ops into the world. Let's make more of them.
They're great. They're so good. Yeah, and this co-op too, it's like right on campus. So I mean, I really feel like I get like the best of everything without having to go to school. Because I'm like, I can easily go to any events that are on campus. There's, tons of people my age around. It's really a pretty good setup.
So, have you organically made friendships with undergraduates in Austin this way?
Kind of. I think that mostly it would be from where I work. Like, I work at a restaurant that's near campus, so like a couple people there do go to school. Honestly, that has been, it's been, I don't know, maybe comforting is the right word, just to see that there are several people who like who went to UT and now are working at this restaurant, and I, didn't go to UT and I am working at the restaurant. Like, just seeing that, this, I don't know, I don't want this to sound horrible, but just that, going to school doesn't guarantee that you won't be working restaurant jobs,
I don't think that sounds horrible. I think that's a reality check. And UT means University of Texas at Austin, right? Cool. Okay, so you were working at Starbucks, you were also working at a restaurant, you were living in the housing co-op, and you had these two internships. That was gap year number three.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, sounds good. And did you still have time for writing? Like, was your inner English major, happy with this setup?
Yeah, I think, I guess that it kind of ebbed and flowed over this time. I like wrote in my journal consistently. While I had like the internships and I was working a lot, it was mostly like just personal writing, nothing that I really polished or wanted to get out there. And then I guess once those internships ended, then I spent more time like working on like my personal blog and writing projects that I was more proud of, and like I made some zines and yeah, so I think that I was able to balance writing in there. Like, it wasn't always the same amount, but I feel like I was able to pursue it to the extent that I wanted to.
Okay, before we get into your final and your current gap year, I want to zoom out a bit and ask at this point, how would you describe your plan? I'm going to say I sound horrible saying this, like your plan for economic security, right? Like what's your personal vision? And maybe, what do you tell to your parents or to people who ask you about this for making sure you can continue supporting yourself and you can find work that feels meaningful to you and you're not locked into service level labor for a long, long time, longer than you would want to be. That's the question I'm not gracefully asking.
No, that is a really good question, and it's definitely something that I think about a lot. I think, I don't honestly have a great answer. I think that, like, right now I'm comfortable working in service jobs, especially because I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't know if going to school for an English degree would necessarily help me get out of service jobs. But I do think that, like, if there does come a time when I, like, you know, really never want to see a bus tub again, I think that the community college would be a really great resource. Like, I've looked into, like, you know, like technical writing and just a way to, like, get a degree that's, like, more immediately accessible than a 4-year degree that would kind of set me up to be able to write and make money writing. And I think part of the reason that I haven't been super eager to pursue that right now is it, like, technical writing doesn't sound like, you know, my, like, dream fun job. And right now I feel like I can, you know, like, work in a restaurant, which I have a lot of fun doing, and then also do the writing I want to do on the side. But I do think that there are options to, like, write in a way that might not be creatively fulfilling, but would allow me to provide for myself. I just, like, I haven't felt a huge desire to look into it yet, but I do think that that is an option.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're living not in your parents' house anymore. You have your own community of friends. You're financially supporting yourself, unless you're not. But I assume it sounds like you are.
You are.
And you've got lots of different projects. You're making connections with people. You're building relationships with organizations. And so you really are adulting at this point, right? You're doing what a lot of people who go to college end up doing for many years after they finish their degrees, between ages 22 and 26. So I don't think my question is even fair. And I thank you for being much more graceful in answering it than I was in asking it. Okay, tell me about this fourth gap year, if we can even call it a gap year anymore. It's just your gap life. What are you doing? What's keeping you engaged this year?
So right now I'm working at a restaurant to make money. I'm working on writing. Lately I've been doing like more like personal journal type writing. And then in the spring I'm taking a fiction writing class. I guess it is the spring. I guess in a couple weeks I'm taking a fiction writing class at the community college again. And then I also, one of my goals this year is to get more involved in the like writing and literary community outside of school in Austin, because like there's a pretty good one. There's a lot of like events at bookstores and different writing groups that I just haven't really like infiltrated yet. So I guess that's something that I want to work on.
Infiltrated. It makes it sound like you don't belong there.
Yep. I need to like, I don't know, break in and prove myself or something.
Ah, well, imposter syndrome affects all of us. Yeah. Great. Is there anything that you can say to people who are listening who might have been in your shoes a few years ago? Someone who is on the cusp of the age that they think they're supposed to go to college, but like you, they have reservations about whether it's going to be worth the time and the money, and whether they really need college to accomplish their goals or to start a meaningful life. Is there anything you can extrapolate from your own experience? Maybe lessons you might have given 17-year-old Maya if you could teleport back in time?
I think that I would just want to remind them that I feel like everything ultimately will work out. Like I did feel kind of anxious about not going to college, and mostly I felt afraid that everything was like taking a lot longer than I thought that it should. Like I thought that I should know exactly where I was going and what I was doing. And I feel like now at this point, like, you know, I still don't know exactly like what I'll be doing 5 years from now, but I feel really happy with where I am and I really love what I'm doing. And I think, you know, I think that that's what matters. So I think that I would tell people not to be super concerned with like, you know, what things look like or how they'll explain what they're doing to other people, but just kind of pay attention to, you know, how their life feels to them. And if it feels good, just keep doing it.
I think that's wonderful advice. And let's do a follow-up interview in 5 years so we can get a reality check. Okay. Maya, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Blake.